You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
When a White House reporter asked the President of the United States, Donald Trump, whether he was ready to move to the second phase of sanctions against Russia and Vladimir Putin earlier this week, Trump responded with a blunt, "Yeah, I am," and chose not to elaborate any further. Following this, the European Union's most senior sanctions envoy was confirmed to be holding talks with US counterparts, which reported to have taken place yesterday. The main topic was to look for tougher measures to weaken Vladimir Putin's war machine after Russia launched its largest ever airstrike against Ukraine this past weekend. To discuss what the second phase of sanctions against Russia could be and how it could impact the Russian invasion of Ukraine, I talked to Stephen Hoadley, a retired professor of international relations at the University of Auckland. What do you think the second phase of sanctions is?
Well, first of all, Mac, it's very good news that the United States and Europe are working together. Donald Trump is sometimes skeptical about Europe. The Europeans are wary of Donald Trump, but on this occasion, it looks like the European officials will come to Washington. They will sit down with Scott Bessent and other Trump officials, and maybe they will come up with a package. Now, we have to remember that both the United States and Europe already has a number of sanctions imposed on Russia and on some secondary sanctions as well. So we're really looking at a marginal addition, sanctions already imposed on Russia. Now, the problem is that the current sanctions aren't really working. Yes, the ruble is down. Yes, there's some economic slowdown. The Ukrainians have damaged the refinery of Russia, and there are great queues now outside stations of ordinary Russians trying to fill up their cars. But the sanctions as a whole haven't really stopped the main source of income for Russia, which is the export of over 3 million barrels a day of oil, even with the sanctions going on. So the question is, can the new series of sanctions reduce that outflow of oil, which is income for Russia, which pays for war machine and also pays to keep Putin in power by making sure that the oligarch and the elite, the army, the intelligence services are all loyal to him as a central paymaker in the Russian system?
You mentioned how the Europeans don't necessarily trust Donald Trump. We see Trump almost verbally attacking Zelensky in the White House one week, and then the next week he's in a conference with European leaders discussing how to weaken Russia. Can you explain why Trump is seemingly all over the place in this conflict?
Well, Donald Trump visualizes himself as a strong man, and he gravitates to other strong men, and he has the so-called bromance with Putin and with Xi and with Kim and others. It's pure egotism. We policy people deplore this personal politics. We think policy should be made carefully by people who know what they're talking about, by experts, by diplomats, by economists, and other people who can bring factual arguments to bear. But Trump is very much a shoot from the hip, an intuitive leader, and to some extent, it's attractive to a certain segment of the American population, which elected him president, but it's certainly very disruptive to those who want incremental policy improvement and gradual reform and keeping the good while changing the bad. And Trump sometimes cuts right across these kinds of rational questions. Now, the question of his relationship with Putin, we saw him greet Putin on the red carpet in Anchorage, Alaska. Trump be coming gradually to the conclusion that Putin has to be curbed in some way. Economic sanctions are the policy of choice at the moment. Tariffs, of course, and other ways, military support to Ukraine. And all of these policy tools are being used. We think they should be used more vigorously. At the moment, it looks like states in Europe may agree on further curbs on Russian credit card use, on the use of crypto exchanges, on use of this so-called shadow fleet of derelict tankers that are carrying Russian oil to India, Turkey, South Africa, whoever will buy it, that is breaking the sanction. The Europeans, of course, don't buy significant Russian oil any longer. They are going to increase or decrease the price cap that they've got, meaning that Russia won't get $60 a barrel. They may get $45 a barrel. Now, that's cost Russia to pump it out of the ground and refine it. In other words, Russia will actually lose money at that rate of exchange. So these are some of the things that Europeans want to add on as package number 19 of their sanctions program, hopefully in coordination with the United States. And then, of course, if the United States does it, then no doubt other NATO countries like Canada will follow. It's possible that some of the East Asian countries will adopt some of these sanctions in sympathy and in opposition to what Russia is doing in Ukraine. So this is all pretty hopeful if it, in fact, comes to fruition. If Donald Trump doesn't change his mind in the next couple of minutes or days, if the Europeans and the American negotiators can come up with a coherent package and present it and execute it to plug some of the holes that this sanctions regime exhibits. The sanctions regime is good, but unless it's executed properly, unless it's executed consistently by all the countries concerned, then it isn't going to be effective, and Russia will continue to smuggle oil and minerals, particularly to China, and China is the biggest hole in the sanctions policy, and Russia's economy will stagger forward. It'll continue on a wartime footing, and Putin will continue his military action in Ukraine, and that's what we want to stop.
If sanctions do expand further, what kind of retaliation can we expect from Russia?
Well, Russia already trades very little with the West. We don't buy anything of significance from Russia, so they really don't have very much to do. They have sanctioned Western officials. They've even sanctioned me. I'm a banned person. I can't travel to Russia. And I'm one of thousands of Westerners, officials mainly. So there isn't very much more that Russia can do. Now, the dilemma facing the European Union and to some extent the United States is that if secondary sanctions are imposed, that is sanctions on India, punishing India for importing Russian oil, that will constrain trade. The European Union is a trading entity, and its reason for formation is to reduce trade barriers. Sanctions are trade barriers. So it's a dilemma, because it'll reduce trade with secondary countries like India. And remember, India is the great hope for New Zealand. Todd McClay hopes that India will open its doors to New Zealand products. So New Zealand is not about to impose any sanctions on India during this period of negotiation for a New Zealand-India trade agreement. And other countries are facing exactly the same problem. So the imposition of secondary sanctions on India is a particularly bad idea, because India is being wooed away from, first of all, Russia and against and China as well, and was moving towards the Western side of the geopolitical alignment. Well, now we say Modi has gone to the economic summit in Tianjin a couple of days ago, shaking hands with Xi. Has Trump, by imposing tariffs on India, spoiled a good relationship that might be advantageous to the Western grouping? So it's a real dilemma that imposing secondary sanctions, imposing sanctions on the shadow fleet will, of course, raise the price of oil at the pump for you and me, indirectly and marginally. And these are some of the dilemmas that the European Union and the United States face as they consider stiffer sanctions on Russia.
Just lastly, if you were to give a yes or no answer, do you think that sanctions against Russia could actually stop this war?
Indirectly, yes. Sanctions, if they would cripple the Russian economy, if they would reduce the ill-gotten profits made by the oligarchs that support Putin, if they convince the leading generals of Russia that they don't have enough fuel for their war machine and pay the conscript and contract soldiers, and if they brought enough pressure to bear on Putin, Putin would have to come to the negotiating table. And that's exactly what we are hoping to achieve. Putin would declare a temporary ceasefire, sit down, negotiate with Zelensky, with the Western grouping, and the war would then pause. It wouldn't bring a permanent peace. We think Russia is inevitably ambitious and would want to continue the war at some time in the future, but at least we could have a short-term pause. The Europeans could, the Ukrainians could repair the damage, and their ability to defend also could be regrouped and strengthened with the help from the Europeans and hopefully from the United States. So the objective here is to make economic pressure translate into political pressure on Putin, and that political pressure to translate then into a ceasefire and the beginning of some kind of negotiating process.
And that was Stephen Hoadley on what we can expect for the second phase of sanctions against Russia and how they might impact the war in Ukraine.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.